Hi, this is Billy here, and this blog relates to the journal paper, The Effects of Framing on the Development of the Design Engineer, Framing Health and Safety in Design. Now, the research that this paper publishes on relates to work that we did early on in a series of research projects around the designer and their views and perceptions and attitudes towards their CDM duties. And this particular piece of work led to further research where I'm just publishing just now, which developed a digital tool to help such designers in their CDM duties. Now, the reason why we did this particular piece of work is that under CDM, designers can influence on-site and during operation and maintenance health and safety outcomes. But they can resent being dictated to by health and safety personnel how they should be doing this. So what we try to do in the work that's printed here is dig a bit deeper into how designers deal with health and safety, how they view it in relation to their day-to-day work. Now, the literature around this paper identified a number of aspects of the design process, which some are pretty obvious, but others make for interesting reading. So, for example, the design process is interdisciplinary. So there are different types, many types of designers involved in the construction process, and we need to acknowledge that they come from different points of view and might view health and safety in different ways, and I'll discuss that in a bit more detail later. It's also important to know what motivates designers and why they might or might not consider health and safety rules during the design process. Now, as you might already know, design can be a complex process. And one of the theories that we drew on in terms of how designers try and deal with this is the theory of balancing. So basically, they simultaneously have to balance things like physical, operational, and even political constraints simultaneously at the same time, as well as health and safety issues. So one of the consequences of this is, in fact, that health and safety is not at the forefront of designers' minds 24/7, but it tends to fleet in and out depending on what they're doing and who is demanding their time. This dictates why and when information is also available, and depending on information overload, health and safety information could either come to the fore or sit at the back. If you have a look at figure 2 in the paper, you'll see an elaborate diagram that kind of summarises the various sources and types of health and safety information that designers perceive is thrown at them. And this can vary from their perception that health and safety is purely what happens to them in their own office environment. But predominantly, they understand that the concept within CDM is looking mostly at construction site health and safety. They're not so much realise the impact on operation and maintenance health and safety, with some exceptions. And they also consider health and safety in relation to standards and guides and just things that they have to do, rather than an outcome that might be either a help or a hindrance to the contractor and end user. Looking at table 2, this presents the various types of designer that the research analysis identified. And these are identified with the names of the categories: the doer, the receiver, and the giver. So I'll just talk you through the three of these in turn. So the doer is seen as the most prestigious type of designer in relation to CDM duties and health and safety aspects. They tend to be the proactive, conscientious designer who have a practical mind and can visualise how their designs will impact on the construction process and the operation and maintenance processes as well. And other research I've done built on this, in fact, and demonstrated that the key thing here is site experience. So when a designer actually sees the fruits of their work, then it helps them immeasurably in terms of how they can visualise how their designs can either help or hinder health and safety further down the line. Other aspects of the doer is that they're not actually impressed with form filling. Now, those of you who may have experience of working in industry and working with designers may very well be familiar with the concept of design risk assessment, which is the classic form filling exercise that many designers perceive or are told to perceive that this is how they discharge their duties. In actual fact, the design risk assessment process tends to produce rather generic design risk assessments. If you take the concept of risk assessment, as we've discussed previously in lectures, then you'll understand that to undertake a risk assessment in the first place, you need to be in possession of a lot of facts and information about the job that's going to be done, who's going to do it, the equipment and the tools that's going to be used, the environment that it's going to take place in, etc., etc. Whereas a designer sitting in an office is not aware of all these facts, and it's only obvious that what they'll produce is possibly a generic form-filling exercise, and it's actually not really seen as favourable by the health and safety executive as well. It's seen as a kind of generic and not very useful contribution to the management of health and safety. So the doers tend to agree with HSE in that they see the form filling is not very useful. They see the act of thinking about the practical health and safety implications as they design as part of their job. Moving on to the receiver. So this is the type of designer that tries to merely gather information, particularly from experts, in an attempt to feel that they've done their job and they've discharged their duties. They tend to like the form filling and being told what to do. They have little impact on health and safety. Therefore, they're seen as pretty much ineffectual. Moving to the givers, this is another subset of the receiver in actual fact. They're even more removed in that they don't even see health and safety as their job, that they see health and safety in its occupational sense, that it's for the contractor to deal with, and other staff far removed from them. These typically designers involved in maybe the concept stage, early stages of the design process, and them themselves tend to be inexperienced, no site experience, maybe junior designers. And they really move outside their comfort zone. They generally rely on repetitive tasks, being told what to do. Now, it's important to be aware of these three different types of designers as identified in the research that's in the journal paper, because it's important to be aware of when to deal with these types of designers, how they will be motivated, and how you might address CDM or health and safety when dealing with them. What you want to do ideally is try and gradually move them away from the form filling, which is incidentally what will be expected of you from industry in particular. So what I'm saying to you is you're trying to move beyond that to best practice, which we would be towards, away from the form filling, towards integrating health and safety with the designer's thinking around designing for health and safety. And the idea as well is to try, the way we achieve that is to try and move away from a them and us, where design and build is seen as completely separate, towards a better team cohesion, because it's only when designers see this impact of their design's decisions on actual practical work on site and during operation and maintenance that they can then learn to incorporate the practical aspects of these health and safety issues into their thinking and decision making. It's worth noting as well that health and safety can relate differently to these different designers depending on the area that they operate in, the industry subsector that they operate within. So for example, the more high risk areas such as nuclear industry and petrochemical, there's a great deal of process plant safety involved in that. So this tends to ingrain in the designers the concept that health and safety is an integral part of what they do. And this tends to automatically have a knock-on effect that they also consider what we might call occupational health and safety, what happens on site, and their other design activities that they undertake. Conversely, you'll see problems arise in other maybe comparatively lower risk industries, such as, example, commercial building or shop fitting. There's where you see designers see little relevance of health and safety. Tends to be the pattern that prevails. So what you have to do there, taken from that, is tailor the expectations of the designer in these scenarios and to try and help them improve the best way you can, using examples from what you find on site and trying to relate it back to the designer's decisions. Well, that concludes the blog on this journal paper. Hopefully you find that useful and an additional piece of information in relation to your tutorial.